Have you ever tried to start reading through the Bible from the beginning to try to make it through the end? And you go through Genesis and you're doing well. You got a lot of great stories there, a lot of important stuff. You get into Exodus, you got a lot of story. But then halfway through Exodus, you start getting into a lot of detailed laws and schematics about things. And if somehow you're still sputtering through Exodus, then you get to Leviticus. And that seems to be where a lot of people in their reading plans kind of just fall apart right there because of all of these laws, but all of these sacrifices and things of that nature. Leviticus has a reputation for being the boring book. We recognize the Bible's inspired and profitable, and there are some that are more eminently readable parts, however, than others. There's a lot of laws and specifications in Leviticus, but even though we might find it boring, it actually can prove quite interesting. And there are lots of laws about sacrifices and various other things, but Leviticus is the primary book in which we understand the reasons for and the nature of sacrifices. And so it is actually valuable for Christians for a lot of reasons. It's very hard to understand the nature of Jesus' sacrifice without understanding Leviticus. It's also hard to understand core religious concepts like holiness, things of that nature, without looking and seeing some of the very physical, concrete ways this gets expressed in Israel as laid out in Leviticus. And so we do well to at least consider what's in the book of Leviticus, so we may have some understanding of these things. The author of Leviticus is most certainly Moses. Matthew 22 and verse 39, Jesus considers love one's neighbor as oneself part of the summation of the law, and that, of course, is found in Leviticus 19 and verse 18. The author of the law is Moses, and the agreement that Moses is the author of Leviticus. The Hebrew author will draw significantly from Leviticus in the way he describes things in Hebrews 9 and 10. From the best textual evidence, again, based upon taking the numbers given in the Old Testament seriously, Moses would have lived around 1450 BC, and the events of the narrative are roughly contemporaneous with writing, maybe up to 40 years beforehand. The events that are described in the book take place over at least 20 days, maybe more, no more than a few months. This is all information being given by God to Moses. Now, the original audience of Leviticus would be Israel in and after the wilderness. We can derive understanding and lessons from it, and it is designed to be primarily a priestly manual. It is designed for priests to understand the kind of things they need to be doing and the specifications and the laws regarding their behaviors. The fact that it's given to all Israel is for all Israel to also understand what the priests are supposed to be doing. And so what's Leviticus doing? It's explaining the nature and system of offerings that are necessary before God. It is describing the religious service of Israel to God, and it is describing the earthly copies of the heavenly reality and how all of this is supposed to be set up. How can we make sense of what's in Leviticus? Well, we got some main sections. The first seven chapters are about offerings. The chapters 8 through 10 describe the ordination of Aaron and his sons. And chapters 11 through 15 are regulations about cleanliness. Chapters 16 through 21 is the holiness code. Chapters 22 through 27 are about dedications and observances. So in Leviticus chapters 1 through 7, we have all kinds of specifications about offerings, how the offerings are supposed to be made, the various things to be done and the order it should be done, and things to take note of. So that's about burnt offerings, grain offerings, peace offerings, offerings for unintentional sin that the high priest would offer, the offerings for the unintentional sin of the whole congregation of Israel, or the unintentional sins of a leader or a commoner. There's also instructions about guilt offerings for not providing witness, uncleanness, or making rash oaths, or guilt offerings involving dedicated items to God for any other sin as well, including offerings for breaches of faith and theft. Then in chapter 6 and 7, we have a lot more priestly instructions about the grain offering, the burnt offering, the offerings required when Aaron's sins would be atoned, the instructions about sin offerings, guilt offerings, and peace offerings, the fact that they are prohibited from eating the fat and prohibited from eating blood, about peace offerings, how peace offerings are to be given to the people offering the peace offering and the priestly portions of that offering. And then finally, concluding that offering instruction in Leviticus chapter 7, verses 37 and 38. In Leviticus 8 and 9, all Israel is assembled to see the ordination of Aaron and his sons, and they are prepared for this. The sin offerings are offered on their behalf. The ram of ordination is offered by Moses. He waves the wave offering. He consecrates and charges Aaron and his sons in Leviticus chapter 8. 8 days later, Israel will bring offerings. Aaron brings a sin offering for himself. They offer the burnt offering. Grain, peace, and wave offerings are also presented. And Aaron blesses the people. The glory of Yahweh appears and consumes the sacrifices in chapter 9. In chapter 10, we learn of Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, who offer inappropriate incense and are killed by Yahweh. Their remains are taken away. There is no mourning allowed from them. It may not be coincidental that afterward there is legislation given about the need to abstain from alcohol when entering the tent of meeting, along with other such instructions and the instruction to eat the offerings properly. Moses will discover that they weren't eaten, but they were burned. He was angry at Aaron and his sons. Aaron defends them, pointing to the circumstance of what's happened, and Moses is mollified. Then we get back to various laws. In chapter 11, we start with clean and unclean foods, in which there's a general description, and then unclean mammals, sea creatures, birds, insects, and all these things, which ones are clean and unclean, how there can be uncleanness due to touching or consuming something, the swarming animals and those made unclean by being in contact with them. There's uncleanness because of touching or eating a carcass, and some statements about unclean animals in general, and thus included the instruction about animals and cleanliness. Chapter 12 is about the uncleanness that comes upon women after the birth of a male child or a female child, the offerings that are to be offered. In chapter 13 and 14 are the long and involved conversations about skin conditions. We kind of call it leprosy, which we say is Hansen's disease. Probably not exactly what they have in mind. They have a whole range of different skin conditions in mind in the ancient Near Eastern world. And there's all kinds of instructions about them, how the priest will investigate them, which ones are more the chronic diseases as opposed to temporary diseases, and what should be done about such things, the cleanliness of the bald man included. The fact that those who are unclean need to be kept away, and the rituals needed to be able to, for somebody who used to be thus ritually unclean to be cleansed if the skin disease leaves them. But not even just people, by the way. There's also instructions about such diseases within garments and also for disease within buildings if you've got some kind of infestation. Like a mold infestation or something of the sort, and the offerings you would need in order to have a cleansed building. And that concludes instruction about diseases. In chapter 15, it's about discharges, the unclean nature of a man with discharge, how it spread to those who come in contact with the man or things he touches, how you offer offerings to be cleansed from discharges. There's uncleanness from seminal discharge, from menstruation, if there is discharge beyond the days of menstruation, and the offerings that you offer when you've had discharges from which you need cleansing. And that concludes the discussion of discharges. In chapter 16, we get into some matters of atonement, how Aaron should enter the holy place, the goats provided for the sin offering, one for sin, one for Azazel, the satyr goat demon that is out in the wilderness. The goat for Azazel is sent out for him. And then there is a cleansing of Aaron and the one who led the goat out. Then they dispose the sin offering. They explain the Day of Atonement, how it's a Sabbath day and a perpetual statute. In chapter 17, the description is made about the animals to be brought to the tabernacle for slaughter and for sacrifice. And there's a condemnation of eating of blood because the life is in the blood, and that provides some of the logic of sacrifice there. And people should not eat animals not executed by man, who should not eat things that die of themselves. In chapter 18, there's concerns about sexual propriety, an exhortation to observe God's law, condemnation of, quote-unquote, uncovering the nakedness of people. To uncover nakedness is to undress them with a view towards some kind of sexual behavior. You're not supposed to do this to relatives. You should not have sex during menstruation. You're not commit adultery. You should not serve Molech. The condemnation of homosexuality and bestiality. And there's an exhortation to follow laws about sexual propriety, and there'll be condemnation if those laws are violated. Chapters 19 and 20 is known what's called the Holiness Code. It's called that because the very first verse, God says, I am holy and you are to be holy because I am holy. And then we have a bunch of laws expressing what that would look like. To observe the Sabbath, to avoid idolatry, to provide offerings correctly, to cultivate your fields, but leave some on the side for those who are dispossessed and the poor. To show fairness, equity, and love in dealings with others. The statutes that should be kept, they should not mix cattle or cloth types. There's legislation about if you have sex with a slave, about fruit trees. They should not be like the nations around them in eating blood, telling omens, rounding the hair on the temples, cutting for the dead. These are where you get some of the condemnations of having tattoos or things of that nature. They're to keep Sabbath. They're to consider the tabernacle holy. They should not make their daughter into a cult prostitute. They should avoid sorcerers, and they should honor their elders. They should render justice to sojourners in the way they use measurements and in balances. The service to Molech is condemned, also turning to sorcery, and that is why they need to follow the rules God has given them. They should not curse their parents. Various sexual improprieties are condemned. They need to be separated from those Canaanites, separate the clean and unclean animals, and again, sorcerers are condemned. Clearly a big concern at the time. In chapter 21, the priests are not to be made unclean for the dead, and they should not go to the mourning rituals. They need to be virgins, holy to God. A daughter of a priest who commits sexual morality should be burned. The high priest should follow these same guidelines. Blemished people should be kept away from the tabernacle, and the priestly portions should be kept from them. Dedicated things in chapter 22, anybody who approaches the tabernacle while unclean is condemned. The Levite cannot partake of the priestly portion while they're unclean. Non-priests should not eat of holy things, and there's legislation about who can and cannot eat these things. There is a need to offer unblemished animals when they are sacrificing. And there is legislation about animals and their kindred in sacrifices, and such things are concluded. In chapter 23, we have discussions of festivals. The Sabbath, the Passover, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, the Offering of the First Fruits, the Feast of Weeks, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Booths. Chapter 24 continues about various things about observances and things. We have perpetual light in the lampstand and in the tabernacle, the presentation of the bread of the presence daily. There is a narrative. Something actually happens. A man blasphemes the name of God, and he is condemned to death by stoning. And after that, the lex talionis is given, the eye for an eye, providing appropriate punishment for crime. Chapter 25 is about the Sabbaths and the Jubilee. The Sabbath year of rest for the land. So there's a weekly Sabbath, but there's supposed to be every seventh year a Sabbath rest for the land. And the Jubilee, every seventh, every 50th year. Every man should have his property that he put up for a surety and a loan or something should be returned. There should be fairness in light of the Jubilee, and various agreements before the Jubilee should keep that in mind. And if they keep the Jubilee, God will provide a blessing to see the people through these times. There's legislation about land redemption, lending to Israelites, debt slavery, and making slaves of other nations, and how one redeems an Israelite that's been sold to a stranger or a sojourner. In chapter 26, we have the great listing of blessings and cursings. There's a recitation of the basic commands to follow God. There's blessings for obedience in verses 3 through 13, and then a much longer list of cursings for disobedience in verses 14 through 39. There is redemption for those who are repentant in verses 40 through 46. In chapters 27, the book concludes with valuations, evaluation of people, evaluation of animals, of a house, how to value and redeem a field, and how these valuations are by the shekel of the tabernacle. How firstborns and devoted things cannot be valued. The legislation there's also given about vowed unclean animals and the tithes that are given that are holy to Yahweh. And the conclusion that these are all the laws that God gave to Moses on Sinai. So just going through that, we can understand why people find it a little tedious. A lot of legislations being laid out there. But we do have some really important passages in Leviticus, a lot of important concepts to keep in mind. In Leviticus chapter 6, verse 24 through 30, we hear about the holiness of the sin offering, how the sin offering is kind of burnt up and then put in a special place because it's been dedicated to God in its holiness. And in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, that's what Paul calls Jesus. Jesus is our sin offering. And that's how Jesus sanctified on our behalf, that we can be made holy in him. Yes, and Nadab and Abihu's foolishness in Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 through 3 is noted. And it is a warning that we should not take God's holiness in vain and that we need to give him appropriate reverence in our behavior and how we handle things. We have in Leviticus 15, 25 through 28, the background of the woman in Luke 8 who has a discharge for 12 years, but she is cleansed by Jesus. Leviticus chapter 17, as we said, the logic of sacrifice is there made apparent, in which the blood has been given on the altar to make atonement for your souls. And that really provides the core logic that animates the idea of sacrifice throughout Scripture, that the innocent life pays with the blood, the giving the life to cover the guilty life. And thus, Jesus is a lamb who will die for the sin of the world, and whose blood is able to atone or cover for all the sins that have ever taken place because he was innocent. In Leviticus 19, we have the idea that be holy as I am holy. This is what Peter will make reference to in 1 Peter 1, verses 15 through 16. And that's still something that's important for us to be holy as God is holy. And Leviticus 19:18, that we should love our neighbor as ourselves, part of kind of the I understand the law, love Yahweh your God, and to love your neighbor as yourself. It is a good summation of our responsibility toward others, and it's consistent with what we see in Romans 12, even in context. Also, of course, learning about the Jubilee. The Jubilee is important. This is kind of the background behind the what is called in Isaiah 61 and what Luke says Jesus quotes in Isaiah 61 there in Luke chapter 4, that the Jubilee, the release from debt. We can understand Jesus' life, death, resurrection as proclaiming the Jubilee, providing that release from debt, the debt that we have accrued in sin and in death. And so there is a lot to digest in Leviticus. There's a lot of laws and regulations. There are some specific instructions about offerings and cleanliness issues and all kinds of other things. We might find it boring, but it has a lot of important lessons. Lessons about all these offerings, exhortation to holiness. And that is why we do well to be thankful to Christ, our sin offering, and to be that holy people set apart for God and for his service. We're so glad that you've joined us today. I'm Ethan with the Venice Church of Christ. We are Christians who are trying to encourage one another and others in Los Angeles. If you have any questions or comments about Leviticus, we'd love to hear them. Please continue our conversation. Please subscribe to us where you found us. If we can be of any further service, if you'd like for us to pray for you, if we can be if you want to meet with us, if we can do anything to help you, please let us know. Please reach out to us at VeniceChurchOfChrist.org. You can also find us on all kinds of social media forums. We're on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Threads, YouTube, lots of them. Reach out to us. Let us know how we can help you. May the Lord bless and keep until we're able to meet again.